ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is the amazing William Channer, co-founder of Panda, host of Dorm Room Tycoon, and the founder of Interface Lovers. And we're going to talk about design in the real startup world. This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder, a simple productivity tool for busy people. Need something on time? Tiny Reminder will play bad cop instead of you by sending friendly notifications. It works great for collecting guest information, speaker slides, articles, or anything else. Sign up free at tinyreminder.com. Hey, William. Yeah, good to see you. Good to have you here.
Hello.
Let's start with a quick questionnaire so that we can learn more about you and then dive into the main topic. How does it sound?
Sounds good. Let's go.
Fantastic. Question number one is, what do you do for a living?
I build products.
Wonderful. We would love some elaboration on that.
I like building products for designers and developers and working with talented designers and developers to do that as well. So we at Panda, we have a core team, but we also collaborate with a lot of other people as well to bring those ideas together. So,
right. Yeah. Give us an insight what Panda is for those who are not familiar with your company.
Yeah, so Panda is a simple way for designers and developers to stay up to date with what's going on in our industry by bringing in multiple websites together and allowing users to browse those websites simultaneously. So it's like a dashboard of RSS feeds where you can have columns or different layouts where you can browse websites. And the whole purpose of that is just to give you a snapshot or a quick overview of what's going on, so you don't have that feeling that you're missing out. As a designer or a developer, our industry, to stay relevant, you have to be informed and know what's going on. So it's sort of, learning is really important for designers and developers. You know, there's other professions, you sort of learn stuff and then you know everything about it and you just repeat. With design and code, it's, you have to learn and relearn and relearn and learn new things. So Panda just helps you stay on top of what's going on. Yeah.
You've been out there for quite a while, right?
Yeah. I've been, and I plan to be here for a while as well. So, yeah.
That's great. Can you give us a bit of background? How did you end up in such situation as you are today?
In building products. So before Panda, I was working in advertising as a copywriter. So I was making ads. I think advertising is a really cool industry, in the sense that it's very creative, or it's, you know, the currency for advertising is creativity. Like that's the materials you use. It's coming up with ideas. The problem with that is that you're creating things for clients, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think we all have this need of, if you're really creative, you want to create something and then build something, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to create something, but then also build something. With advertising, you have a brief. Let's say you're working on, I don't know, British Airways, for example. So you're working on a British Airways campaign. You're working that for 2 to 3 weeks, and that's it. You know, it's done and dusted, and there's this idea of, you get attached to an idea, and then you put all this energy into it, and then after that, it's no longer yours. And after a while, it sort of just becomes a bit draining. And that satisfaction that you get from creating something and then building it, that sort of pride, you don't get that. So you sort of feel unfulfilled. And I certainly did.
That totally resonates with me so much. You want some ownership, right?
Yeah, you want some ownership. Especially ideas are Anyway, the good ideas are generally a reflection of ourselves. So if you look at an idea, if you create something, it's a part of you. You know, there's some fragments that are you and sort of represent you in some way or another. So with Panda, the tone of brand is friendly and warm, and that's sort of how we are as a team as well. So we just very casual, relaxed, and that comes through in the brand as well. But that's just because that's who we are, right? So yeah, when you put something into an idea and then it has to go to somebody else, it's sort of, it's cool initially, but then after a while, you want to look back and see that I've done these things and I haven't just given them away to somebody else. Yeah. So the startup world and creating things was always something I wanted to do. It was just finding the right idea. And the podcast show Donald Tycoon was a way for me to learn from other people and try and figure things out and see where I could place my feet and see what I could run with. So when I was working in advertising, I was also podcasting and just keeping my ears to the ground, really. Yeah.
What about your other project, which is called Interface Lovers? That's also interviews, but in different form, right?
Yeah. So that's... So Interface Lovers is a showcase of designers that are creating the things that we use every day. So behind all the popular products or big companies are individuals, people that create the things that we use. And it's actual people that do, you know, think things through and sort of iterate, and there's actual like people creating the things that we use, and it's quite easy to forget that there was one person responsible for a particular interface, or, you know, and I wanted to sort of celebrate that, but also give them a platform to share what they know. You have famous designers, and I don't want to name any names. Sometimes you wonder why they're famous, and then you have really, really talented designers that don't really have a name, and it's like, how come these guys don't have a name when their work is like 10 times better? So I really wanted to give a voice to those that just put their heads down and they're not sort of actively involved in Twitter or on Dribbble, but they've done amazing work. And I think that again, it sort of stems back to what Panda is all about, which is providing inspiration and information and helping people learn. Interface Lovers follows that theme, and it's a way of seeing behind the screen and seeing how a designer may go about doing certain things.
I wonder, as a fellow, you know, interviewer, a question for me, side note, how do you figure out who is the person to interview, who is behind something? Let's say you decide you want to interview someone from MailChimp. How do you go around finding who exactly you want to interview?
I usually interview the founder. Uh-huh. So for me, I want to be more consistent with the interviews, but I'm not consistent because I only do interviews when I want to learn something about a particular thing.
Uh-huh.
So if I feel like I have nothing to learn, then I don't do interviews, because I think that's where the interesting conversations come from, where you can really ask, how did you do this and why did you do this? So almost like mini office hours, you know? So you sit down with somebody, have a coffee, and it's just like, hey, let's just cut all the BS and just tell me how you did this. And I really want to know, because I want to apply this to what I'm doing. So, I mean, if you look you can sort of see a theme throughout my interviews. So right now I'm interviewing a lot of investors. And at a time I was considering raising money. So I thought, hey, let me just hit up all the VCs and angel investors I know and learn about this space a bit more. And then if you go back, there's a point in time where I'm just interviewing a lot of designers. And that's just because I wanted to learn more about design. And so my interviews are really selfish. I do them for myself. And then I just happen to hit record as well. So, yeah, I do it to learn. So I pick guests that I know that I can learn from. And folks that I know that can teach. So typically they've given a lot of talks before, and they're familiar with the sort of thought leadership in sharing. They have an expertise. So, yeah, that's sort of how I pick people that have a point of view, about a particular thing, and we can really hone in on that subject and really explore and see where else we can go and dig deep, you know. So,
absolutely. What does your typical day look like?
Well, recently I've been trying to end the day earlier. I think waking up early is really, really important, and something that I've realized maybe in the past week or so. I used to work really late, start late, work late, but I'm trying to change that now and work early, and if I can, finish early, but it doesn't always end that way. But a typical day, it starts in, I have a big whiteboard, and I have post-it notes on. And each post-it note represents a day, so Monday to Friday. And then I like have columns where for each day I have items that I need to do. So it's a to-do list on my whiteboard, basically. And then I look at that and then talk to the guys on Slack about what issues we need to do on GitHub. And then, yeah, we just start the day and then... it's really hard. It's really hard to sort of say I have a format because my sort of role on Panda sort of changed in the sense that you more or less are now leading a team. So you're very much on the responsive where you're dealing with requests or there's just a lot of inbound now, you know? So
absolutely.
As a maybe on the contrast, if you're a designer, it's very much heads down, let me finish this project off. As someone that's leading, it's responding and probing, like, hey, how's this going, following up and things. It's a lot of coordinating rather than doing actual work, which is strange if you're a creative person. It's a strange place to be in. Like, yeah.
That leads to the next question, which is, what do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
What I enjoy the most? I enjoy being independent. So we haven't raised any money. And I like the fact that we've created something that resonates with people. I also just enjoy serving designers and developers. I think that's really fun and inspiring because designers and developers are always looking for the new thing. And they talk a lot as well. It's a very vocal community. So it's when you do something right, you know it. And when you do something wrong, you know it. It's very, the feedback is very potent. It's just like, yeah, you do something good, you get praised. You don't do something good, you get slaughtered. So, I like that. And it's also, working with designers and developers, just like, it forces you to bring your A game because everybody's so critical. I mean, if you go to Hacker News and read the comments, it's just brutal. And everybody's just so critical of each other's work, and it's a great challenge. And what I don't like about what I do, I would just say there's just a lot of pressure, and there's sort of no days off, but it's just everything comes back down to you, really. And when you're independent, and you just have to sort of try and stay on top of things. There's not really time to sort of fall behind, and if you do fall behind, then it becomes quite overwhelming. So you have to try and stay on top of things, and that means that you can't really like take it easy. Although even if you wanted to, it's if you take it easy, then there might be a cost to taking it easy, you know. So yeah, but it's sort of, you know, if somebody gave me $50 million, I'd still be doing what I'm doing right now. So it's not something that I want to change. It's just that's the reality of the game, and it's just being aware of that as well. That you have to put effort into it, but if it's something you enjoy, then it's okay.
So the freedom is both a blessing and a curse. You have to take your own responsibility in your own hands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's being an adult, you know. So
I guess.
Yeah. So it's, I don't think it's something we should run away from, responsibilities. It's just realizing that there's a consequence to our actions. So yeah.
What is your next big thing?
My next big thing.
Right.
I can't tell you.
it's a commercial secret, is it?
I want to work on other products as well. So there's some other ideas that I have on my mind. I can talk in a sort of universal way. I don't want to talk about my next big thing, but I think the next big thing is, generally speaking, is improving the old. So I think innovation is overrated, and I think we spend a lot of time trying to come up with new, unique ideas, and I think that space is overrated. I think what's interesting is looking at what people are currently using and seeing how we can package it in a better way and make it better and remove the frictions of what they're currently using. So instead of presenting new products, working on products that people are already using, but improving those. I think that's, I mean, it's like what Slack did, right? It's taking something that is very familiar and just really improving it.
That's correct. So much resonates with me because being a creative worker, I really hate when they call my work creative because it's so conservative and it's so traditional in the solutions that I suggest to people. It's just I'm trying to make it simple and clear, but not innovative, not so.
I think innovation is, I don't know, I just, there's a lot, it's a buzzword that doesn't really mean anything. I think there's still a lot of work to do what we currently have rather than thinking about new frontiers and all this other AI, VR stuff, you know. I think there's still a lot of basic things we need to improve before we even start delving into those things. Yeah.
Right. Let's talk about design in real world, in real life. And I want to be selfish, just as you described, and ask you, what's your take on design founders, since you've interviewed just a range of different founders? Have you seen successful design founders? And do you think if they have a right to exist, so to speak?
Design founders. Give me an example of a design founder.
For example, the bootstrap founders that typically come from the world of developers because they can craft the product themselves. Mm-hmm. While it's harder to be a designer founder, which means you're a designer by craft and you can't really code your product up. Mm-hmm. And you either have to seek investment or just bootstrap it really hard way or I don't know what. So it's harder for designers. Mm-hmm. But I think they get a chance to lead the product this way from mm-hmm. design, not from development.
Yeah.
So that angle, what's your take?
On designers leading products, on designers being founders, yeah.
Right.
On designers being founders, designers being founders. I think if a designer is willing to be a founder, then it's fine. It's only a problem if a designer wants to be a founder, but he's designing, and that's the problem. So if a designer is willing to move into that role and put sketch away, then that's totally fine. But I don't think you can be running a business if you're trying to polish an icon. You know, so that sounds bad, but but I mean, it's the role of a founder has its own challenges. So, you know, I think it's totally fine. You know, I don't think there's like a qualification to be a founder. You know, the founders can be lawyers, they can be accountants, they can be fashion designers, they can be, you know, it's more or less, I have this product that I want to sell. And if designers are willing to go on that sales front, sales and marketing side, of how do I push this out, or how do I get the word out, how do we grow this, how do we make money, then, you know, if that becomes your canvas in one way or another, you know, it's like how can we be creative about making money? How can we, you know, you apply that design thinking to solving a business and building a business, then it's totally fine. I think the great founders are great thinkers, and designers are forced to think critically. So I think designers are they've been trained. I think they're in a real good position to build products, especially today as well. And people's expectations of a product and what it should be and how it should look. Everybody's design taste has you know gone up. The person on the street can recognize good design, and I think they appreciate good design consciously or unconsciously. I think it's totally fine, and I don't think just because they can't code that they shouldn't build stuff. It's, you know, I think the building part is the easiest part, and I think design and design and code is not overrated, but I mean, if you go on Product Hunt, everybody's launching a product, right? So in the early days of the startups, like, you know, 99 and 98, when it was really hard to get things off the ground and execution was really key because cost and infrastructure was just so, it was just, you know, a big challenge. But now it's super easy to get things off the ground that, you know, having a product is like, so what, you know? So the question then becomes, how do we get this out, and how, when we get this out, when we get the users, how do we keep them, and how do we ensure that they stay engaged, and that they're happy, and we meet a need, and that's sort of the bigger challenges is the growth part. And if you speak to investors, they don't really talk about, well, I'm sure they do initially, but you know, the bulk of the conversation is, how is this going to grow? How is this going to be big? Yeah, that sort of comes through marketing, sales, and all the business stuff that we sort of tend to shy away from in this industry. But the really good designers that have a business that I know of are really good at business and design. You know, it's not design that has put them in that position. It's their business acumen as well, that has sort of given them that competitive advantage. Yeah.
From the external perspective, from my outlook, you're just living in that world of startups and have interviewed a lot of successful founders. Do you recall, like, I would just love to have your take, how questions are design related, of course, how design is being treated there, or are the conversations out there almost all about sales and marketing and growth
on the podcast?
A podcast and the business, you know, reality in general.
It depends on the person that I'm talking to, but I think the bigger picture, I think good design is expected. So it's not a talking point, you know. I think you're meant to have a product that's usable. You know, that is expected. So that you don't get bonus points for that. It's what people are really interested in is just how do you get more people using this? Because that's when you know you're really serving a need. And the more people that you serve, the bigger the impact you make and the more value you provide. So, I think that's fair to say. I think that's, there's no problem with that.
How do you approach design in your own company in Panda?
How do you approach design?
What was your design workflow?
It's very organic. We don't have a design workflow.
Okay.
Yes, we have to do this. Let's do this. And then we share that design in the Slack, and then we get feedback. Everybody makes suggestions, and then we do it. So it's very organic. There's not really a process, and I think that's the beauty of working in small teams, is that you don't have to really be formal about things. You can either write an email of what should be included in the design, or you can send a message on Slack and send screenshots or send wireframes, and then give it to the right person to do, you know. When I work outside of Panda, it's a bit different. So for interface lovers, I worked with Timothy on that, who led the design for interface lovers. And I just started in a Google Docs with a brief of what sort of the purpose of this, what it would be and what it should look like and what it should feel like. I think when I'm working outside, when I'm doing other projects, it's a bit more formal. But within Panda, it's a bit ad hoc. It's just like just rough and dirty. It's not really formal, yeah.
Can you recall any of your favorite stories or guests, both at Dorm Room Tycoon and Interface Lovers?
Guest on Dorm Room Tycoon. Let's see. I remember Walt Moss, but the most nervous for was Walt Mossberg. So he used to be at Recode and Wall Street Journal as well. He's most famously known, for getting Steve Jobs and Bill Gates together. And you sort of see them on the red seats. And as I'm interviewing him, I'm just thinking to myself, this guy had like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates in the same place together. So, it's just really crazy and surreal that I was able to sort of connect with him and interview him. I had a really cool encounter with Malcolm Gladwell. So Malcolm was in Berlin. I didn't even know that he was in Berlin. And I just bumped into him. He was in a bar. He was in a bar on the balcony. It was during the day, and he was typing on his laptop. He was wearing a t-shirt, shorts, very casual. And I'm going to the toilet, and I'm looking outside the balcony. I just see this guy, this hair. I'm like, I know this hair. I've seen this hair before. It's sort of distinct, sort of Afro-ish, fuzzy hair. And it's like, that's Malcolm Gladwell. And he was just by himself, riding away on his laptop. And I was like, I got to talk to this guy. So just went outside, said, hey, big fan. Love your writing. He writes for The New Yorker. I was actually generally a big fan of Malcolm Gladwell. I was telling him articles that he had written for The New Yorker. And I really like this piece. I would love to interview you. And he was like, yeah, sure, we can do it tomorrow. So we met the next day. That evening, I prepared for the interview. And then we just did it the next day. But the funny thing, I was trying to interview him for a long time. But his PR was not interested. So it was really funny that then when we met up in person, he was totally down. So I think, it's just seizing the opportunity. And that's just a really good example of that sometimes things might not always go as how you planned it, but there are sort of these pockets of opportunities that if you seize them, things can go your way, yeah. Even if it takes a long time. Right. So sometimes you just have to wait, you know, and wait. And then when the opportunity arises, as sort of creatives, we have, I think a lot of creatives have a lot of initiative, so they always try and try and create the circumstances that they want, and sometimes it doesn't happen. But later down the line, it can happen if you're patient enough. I think that's something that I'm learning more, is just to be patient.
Besides being patient, if you were to give two big pieces of advice to someone who is starting out with their own product out there in the software market, what these two pieces of advice would be?
Don't think about the product, think about the market. So think about the product is not important. What's more important is the market you're serving. And make sure that market is willing to pay for what you're solving. So before you start building, talk to lots of people and ask them to pre-order what you're going to build. And if they are willing to do that, then, that sort of justifies you spending all your time on it. The worst thing is to spend time on something that nobody wants. So we tend to think about products, but I think we should think about markets. And if you look at successful companies out there, they have one thing in common, they serve a market where people have money and they're willing to spend and buy. So whether that's small business owners or project managers or I don't know, but you just want to make sure that you build products for people that that are willing to sort of have that problem, pay for that problem to be solved.
That's great. So that's number one, follow the market, focus on the market, not on the product. And something else, another tip for our listeners.
What was the question again?
Two pieces of advice for people who are starting out with their own products.
I think another one is being willing to collaborate with other people as well. So designers, and we're sort of used to doing the work independently, right? So if you're designing something, you don't really need somebody else to design the thing because you're already doing the design. It's very, especially for, I would say, freelancers, that a lot of the work that we do is very independent. We're either working in a coffee store with our headphones on, working at home with our headphones on or the speakers on. Like, it's just us and the work. But I think an important ingredient is other people and bringing other people into the mix. Even other designers, even if you're a great designer, bringing in another designer can take what you're doing 10x, you know, it could really take it to the next level. And I sort of personally seen this myself as well, just working with other people. It's like, wow, we have so much, this thing is so much better now that you're involved in this, you know? So even if the idea is a good idea, I think to create something that, to create something, well, to strive, because I think creating something great is really hard. I don't think we're there, you know, not even close. But to get to that stage, I think it involves more people that are willing to share and contribute to this idea. So yeah. Collaborate. Bring in your friends. Bring in with people that you sort of respect or admire. And it's also a great opportunity for you to maybe even collaborate with somebody that you respect, you know. And it sort of becomes, it's a good conversation starter. Hey, I have this cool project. Let's talk about it. And even if they don't join, you know, that conversation will help refine what you're working on. Maybe they will say something in the conversation that will, you know, spark another thing and bring a new twist to what you're working on. You know, what you want when you're working on a product is insights. And insights come from humans. They don't come from... I mean, you can have your own insights for sure, but the great insights come from either you watching somebody use a product or you talking to somebody about a product. And that doesn't have to be your users. It can just be friends and people that you respect. So, you know, I think the greatest creators are the greatest observers. And they really understand human beings, and whether you're a writer, a musician, or a fashion designer, or an interior designer, you know, they're really good at reflecting human behavior or reflecting how things are right now, you know. So, big fan of collaborating with people. Sometimes I just come up with ideas just for the sake of collaborating with somebody that I'm interested in collaborating with.
Awesome.
because I know that it, you know, when building something is great, but building relationships with somebody is even better. And it's sort of, you have these teams that you can rely on, you know, that for when you want to do something else or continue that the thing you're doing, you know that there are people within your network that are there to lend a hand. And I think that's really important when you're independent, you're by yourself, if you don't have investors, you have to rely on the people around you. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing your insight, William. The last one totally resonates with me, and actually a lot of it. Market first and collaborating, finding people who are maybe even better than yourself, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Where can people find your work online? Where can they follow you?
I don't have like a portfolio thing. I should do one. But I'm just on Twitter at William Chenna. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best place right now. And of course, you can listen to the podcast show, drt.fm, and go to Interface Lovers.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have you as a guest, and I hope you have a great day. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.